the liturgy of the hours, of course, is part of the liturgical life. And the reading for today, this is not from not for Our Lady of Loreto, but this is for Wednesday of the second week of Advent. A beautiful reflection from St. Augustine in the Office of Readings. I just have to find it. Wednesday, second week of Advent. Yes, it's a great Advent reflection. This is what St. Augustine says. God established a time for his promises and a time for their fulfillment. The time for promises was in the time of the prophets until John the Baptist. From John until the end is the time of fulfillment. You know the Advent pattern. The first reading is the promise, and then the gospel reveals its fulfillment. This is what St. Augustine says. God, who is faithful, put himself in our debt, not by receiving anything, but by promising so much. It's a beautiful way of putting it. God doesn't owe us anything, except once he makes a promise, then he owes us something. He has to fulfill his promise. A promise was not sufficient for him. He chose to commit himself in writing as well, as it were making a contract of his promises. That's the whole Old Testament, especially the prophets. He wanted us to be able to see the way in which his promises were redeemed when he began to discharge them. So the time of the prophets was, as we have often said, the foretelling of the promises. He promised eternal salvation, everlasting happiness with the angels, an immortal inheritance, endless glory, the joyful vision of his face, his holy dwelling in heaven, and after resurrection from the dead, no further fear of dying. That's quite a summary of divine promises. And now, once he makes a promise, because God is faithful, he has to fulfill the promise. He's put himself in our debt, Augustine says. So that's a great Advent reflection, because what has God promised and how has he fulfilled the promises? That's how we look back. But looking forward, we say, what has God promised? And why do we live in hope that he will fulfill his promises? Well, partly because he's God and he's faithful, but also because he's proven himself by doing it already. Today's first reading, again from Isaiah, is another glorious Advent prophecy. At the root of it is the complaint of the Israelites that they're suffering too much. I mean, this is written at a time when they were under oppression. And so they're saying, according to Isaiah, they're saying to God, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my right is disregarded by my God. In other words, God is not paying attention to me in all my problems. He's disregarding me. He forgot me. God's answer to this starts actually before that question comes up. But he starts out by, you could say, establishing his credentials. To whom can you liken me as an equal? Who are you complaining to here? Who do you think is the one who has forgotten you? And then he says, I'm the one who led out the army, and he's talking about the stars now, the heavenly bodies, numbers them, calling them all by name. There are a lot of stars. God knows each one of them by name. Now, at the time this was written, of course, Isaiah was looking at the heavens the way everybody did until the invention of electric light, and light pollution makes it hard for us to see the stars. But the ancients all knew that there were thousands and thousands of stars. Now, we don't see as many stars as they did because we live in the city, but we know, because of the advance of technology, that actually there are far more stars that we cannot see than the stars that we can see. We know this by, especially now, by the space telescopes. Hubble Space Telescope, James Webb Space Telescope. These telescopes, which look into the heavens, actually, they don't even count the stars anymore. They identify galaxies. When they look into the far distant reaches of the universe, they identify galaxies which are themselves collections of millions, if not billions, of stars, each one of them. And they don't know, they don't have names for all the galaxies, they just give them code numbers. M-774B or something like that. Well, there's M-774B. And then they say, well, that galaxy probably has about a billion stars in it. And we don't bother naming them, we can't see them. God knows each one of those stars and knows each one of them by name. That's what the prophecy says. He knows each star by name. So this idea that God has forgotten me, that God is disregarding me, doesn't make sense. Although, you know, the modern argument that if the universe is so vast, if it has astronomical numbers of stars, galaxies, planets, and whatever, well, then that makes us insignificant. I'm just a speck of dust in a vast cosmos, and I have no significance because I'm too small by comparison to the universe. That's one of the arguments that modern people make. Well, this reading says, no, that doesn't make sense, because there isn't any insignificant speck of dust to God. He knows them all. None of them is insignificant. He wouldn't bother creating them if he didn't think it had significance. And all the more, any speck of dust made in his image and likeness, which is the human person, is not insignificant to God. The other extreme, just to fill out the picture, the other extreme that modern thinkers go to, on one hand they say, well, we're insignificant and have no meaning because we're so small. The other extreme is to say, I'm in charge of the universe. I'm going to define my own reality. I'm going to be at the center of my cosmos. Well, that's not true either. We can't define our own reality. God, the creator, is the one who defines us, and he knows us by name. So this is God, as they say, establishing his credentials. And then he goes on to make some promises. Okay, I'm reading from Isaiah chapter 40 here. The eternal God, creator of the ends of the earth, he does not faint or grow weary. His knowledge is beyond scrutiny. So he has the credentials, he has the power to fulfill his promises. What does he say? He gives strength to the fainting. For the weak he makes vigor abound. Though young men faint and grow weary and youths stagger and fall, they that hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar as with eagle's wings. They will run and not grow weary, walk and not grow faint. A great promise to anybody who grows weary and grows faint, as we all do. Anybody who is dragged down by the sufferings, the circumstances of life, as we all can be on almost any day. Maybe we have a day of joyful celebration like we had on Monday, and that lifts up our spirits. But this is Wednesday already. So now the burdens of life come crashing back on us, and we say, oh, I have so much to do, my health is broken down, or my family is divided, or I don't have any money, or something, and then we're burdened again. Well, the promise is, no, you're going to soar with eagle's wings. When I read this prophecy, at least this morning when I read it, it brought back to mind one of my experiences in the Las Quinas City Jail. I used to do some ministry there. I remember going there to say Mass. It probably was on Easter. I don't really remember. But the prisoners gather, when they gather for the Mass, they have a little music ministry, a little choir. They're not very good, but their spirit is very good. And they have an old electric guitar and an old amplifier, which makes a terrible sound. I think it's a distorted sound. It really is not very inspiring. But at one point, the choir launched into this song of praise. I don't know the name of the song, but you might know it. One of the lines is, we will soar, we will soar like an eagle. You know that song? We will soar like an eagle. It's an inspiring song. It's a Christian praise song. And, these prisoners, I mean, they're in the lowest possible condition. It's a filthy jail. They're in there for unknown amount of time. They haven't even been on trial yet, so they're just waiting around in an overcrowded jail, and they start singing, we're going to soar like an eagle. And it was really moving, because these men, they were really putting their hearts and souls into proclaiming this promise of the Lord. Beautiful. It's faith. If you want to live by faith, you have to claim, you have to take seriously the promises of the Lord, even though you don't see them fulfilled yet. So the Advent spirit was on display in that group of prisoners singing about soaring with eagle's wings. Okay, so that's the promise. Now, how does this get fulfilled? How does it get fulfilled? We're not in the time only of promises, although the promises are still valid. We're also in the time of fulfillment, and that's what the gospel tells us. Here's Jesus, the famous declaration that he is meek and humble of heart, and that he wants us to come to him with our burdens. Come to me, he says, come to me. In Advent, we say, come to us, Lord. Halina, Halina Jesus, come, come, Lord. Well, the Lord is also saying, come, you come to me. You ask me to come to you, I do. But you also have to come to me. Come to me with your burdens, all you who labor and are burdened. I will give you rest. It's a promise. I will give you rest. Take my yoke. Learn from me. I'm meek and humble of heart. I want you to be meek and humble of heart. If we're not humble of heart, we don't recognize the fulfillment of the promises. We don't even recognize the reliability of God. We think that God has abandoned us if we're not humble of heart, if we're insisting on our own way, or we're defining our own reality, or if we're insisting that we're too insignificant, that God can't bother, if he exists at all, he can't bother to pay attention to us because the universe is too big. No, that's not humility. Humility is, oh Lord, if this is what you said, I accept. If this is what you promised, I believe. That's a humble heart says that. Take my yoke upon you, learn from me. You will find rest for yourselves. So anybody who feels the need for rest, well, actually we all do, we all do. But when that need is oppressive or heavy, this passage is the Lord's answer. Come to me, come to me. Yes, we know that we will have rest in the next life. Maybe we don't get as much rest in this life, but we will rest in the next life, eternal rest. But even here, when we're united with the Lord, our burden is lightened. If you don't know this, you have to try it out. Spend some time with the Lord. Spend some time in adoration. Spend some time in prayer. Withdraw from the level of the burdens, the responsibilities. Take a little time just to be with God and recognize you're not alone and you're not carrying the burden alone. And that knowledge, that conviction, lightens the load. It doesn't change the circumstances necessarily, but it certainly changes the experience. So this is a beautiful, well, it's Jesus identifying himself as the fulfillment of the promise, but then he's also renewing the promise. I will give you rest. I will. So let's take him seriously. Let's claim with the conviction, the certainty of faith, with the genuine Christian hope that we will find rest. And we will. We do. That's part of what we celebrate. Even in Advent, when we haven't gotten to Christmas yet, we're already joyful in anticipation. That's Christian hope. And we rejoice in God's promises and in the fulfillment of his promises.